from KMXT in Kodiak, this is the last Alaska Fisheries Report of 2010, or the first one of 2011, depending on when your public radio station is airing the show. Coming up, a king gillnet fishery is unlikely for the Stikine and Taku Rivers. Reintroduced sea otters apparently breed like rabbits, and Cora Campbell is finding the road to the commissioner's office a little rough. All that and more coming up on the Alaska Fisheries Report.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. On the web at amsea.org.
Cora Campbell's appointment as Fish and Game Commissioner continues to raise eyebrows and objections from some around the state, including Native organizations. The Southeast-based Alaska Native Brotherhood says it may try to block her confirmation by the legislature, but both sides also say they're willing to talk. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld has more.
The Alaska Native Brotherhood's regional leadership came out swinging when it learned Governor Sean Parnell was about to name Cora Campbell Fish and Game Commissioner.
We are not afraid of going to the legislature and expressing our views.
Longtime Southeast Tlingit activist Bob Loescher heads up the ANB's Subsistence Committee.
We did that when previous governor appointed an attorney general that was not to our Alaska Native liking, and we were able to defeat that confirmation.
The governor appointed Campbell to head the department just before Christmas. The 31-year-old former commercial fisherman used to head up the Petersburg Vessel Owners Association. She more recently worked as fisheries advisor to former Governor Sarah Palin, and she handled similar duties as a special assistant to Parnell. Loescher says his group doesn't know her, and it should.
We're very concerned going forward that her inexperience and her lack of knowledge of who the players are throughout Alaska outside of the commercial fisheries arena could be hindering her role in the fish and game management as we look forward to 2011.
He says ANB worries Fish and Game is already biased towards commercial fisheries and against subsistence, and the new commissioner will be more so. Campbell says she's heard that before, and it's wrong.
Many people associate me with the commercial fishing industry because that's where I spent my early years. But the fact of the matter is I transitioned into a different role several years ago, a statewide role with responsibilities to a broad constituency and to all user groups.
Campbell says her time in the governor's office gave her a chance to learn about a wide range of fish and game issues, and she says she's closely followed subsistence.
One of my jobs prior to going to work for the state was to supervise an education and outreach program. And that program was aimed at increasing awareness of the dual federal and state management systems and to promote public involvement in the subsistence management process.
Campbell says she's already talking to the ANB about meeting to address its concerns. She says she hopes leaders come to see her as a partner rather than an opponent. ANB's Loescher says he's interested in a meeting, but if his group isn't satisfied, it won't be alone.
Alaska Native Brotherhood is just part of many, many groups across the state focused on making sure that assistance resource is a preference and a priority to the Alaska Natives and rural community people.
The other commissioner finalist was Board of Game member Ron Somerville. ANB leaders say that was a slap in their face since the 73-year-old Juneau resident had been a longtime foe of their subsistence goals. This is Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau.
Meanwhile, Parnell's pick of Campbell as commissioner is being met with skepticism from two powerful legislators. Campbell still needs to be confirmed by the legislature, and some of its members are already expressing reservation over the 31-year-old former fisheries advisor. Senate President Gary Stevens of Kodiak says he's concerned by her lack of academic background, common in previous commissioners. Her predecessor, Denby Lloyd, was a trained biologist with decades of experience working for the agency.
I personally have some reservations, not because I don't like her or anything like that, but just because I think it should be a professional academic with biological experience.
Several recent high-level departures at Fish and Game have made room at the top. Its commercial fisheries director left along with Lloyd. So did an assistant and deputy commissioner, taking with them their institutional knowledge. State House Majority Leader Alan Osterman of Kodiak says that's not a good setup for someone who doesn't have executive leadership experience.
I do have concerns about her experience. Running a department of the state of Alaska You don't necessarily have to have the scientific background if you've got the right people working for you, but you do have to have an understanding of how to run a corporation or a large corporation or a large department like that. Like I said, there's approximately 700 people in that department.
Both legislators said they'd have to poll more of their colleagues to gauge Campbell's support. Both lawmakers said the confirmation hearings likely won't be scheduled until near the end of the 90-day session.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Pebble Partnership. Listening before we act. Find out more at pebblepartnership.com. And by
the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
It looks like there will be no gillnet fishery targeting king salmon returns to the Stikine and Taku rivers again this May. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game announced that the preseason forecast for both systems is too low to allow for a commercial opening. Matt Lichtenstein reports.
Petersburg-Wrangell Area Management biologist Troy Tina says the Stikine return is forecast at 30,000 kings, which leaves little room for a commercial harvest for U.S. fishermen.
At a forecast of that size, the allowable catch for the United States is only 190 fish. The 190 fish is too small to allow any directed commercial fisheries, but it does allow for liberalized sport fish regulations.
Those liberalized sport limits don't go into effect until the department puts out an announcement in the spring. This is the third consecutive year the forecast has not allowed for a commercial harvest in Southeast. Tina says a couple of problems have led to the poor returns. Those runs were spawned during years of very large escapement when lots of fish made it upriver. According to Tina, that resulted in crowded stream conditions.
The escapement from those large returns were not the best for producing future good returns. And so that's kind of what we are seeing. That was 2005, 2004, 2003, was the production off those large escapements was not that good.
Also, Tina says the ocean conditions were not that good for king salmon survival. Commercial fisheries on the Stikine stocks reopened in 2005 for the first time in decades. Even with the commercial harvest that year, Tina says about 40,000 fish made it upriver to spawn. That was well above the top end of the department's escapement goal for the year, which was 28,000 fish. Tina says the runs have continued to meet escapement goals each year, except for 2009. He's optimistic for the future.
I think we are on the upward turn of things, on an upward trend here. You know, this preseason forecast, 30,000, is, you know, significantly higher than last year's preseason forecast, 23,000.
And the actual return ended up just a few thousand fish short of that this past year, but well within escapement goals. Like the Stikine River, the forecast for the Taku River near Juneau is also too low for a commercial fishery in May, according to the department. At a preseason estimate of 41,000 fish, the U.S. would only be allowed to take just over 1,500 kings. Juneau Area Commercial Fisheries Manager Kevin Monagle says this forecast is very similar to last year's, and like last year's fishery, the department's taking a conservative approach. The department plans to produce in-season estimates of the king returns for both rivers by late May. If the numbers come in substantially higher than the preseason forecast for either system, the department says it could allow for some limited commercial fishing. When they've been open, the Stikine and Taku fisheries have provided a substantial boost for gillnetters, whose regular season starts in June. In Petersburg, I'm Matt Lichtenstein.
Scientists studying sea otter populations in Southeast hope to have a new estimate of the number of animals in the region out by this time next year. Aerial surveys of otters in the southern panhandle this past summer show a 13% annual growth rate for the reintroduced mammals, and researchers say otter numbers have doubled since the last survey was completed 7 years ago. Meanwhile, other research continues on the otter's diet and how that may be affecting shellfish species targeted by commercial fishermen. Joe Vichnicki reports.
The Alaska Department of Fish and Game reintroduced sea otters to Southeast Alaska in the late 1960s after the fur trade all but eliminated the animals. In southern Southeast, the department released 51 otters near islands west of Craig and another 55 otters near islands on the southern end of Prince of Wales Island. A 2003 survey estimated that descendants of those initial 106 animals had grown to 5,845.
Otters have at least doubled their number since the last survey 7 years ago.
That's Verena Gill, a wildlife biologist for the Marine Mammals Management Division of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. She's part of the collaborative research effort that's funded by the Alaska Sea Grant Program. It also involves students and faculty from the University of Alaska Fairbanks School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences and the Marine Advisory Program. Researchers spent a month in July and August flying aerial surveys from Petersburg south to the Canadian border counting otters. Gill says the southern southeast otter population is growing 13% each year. Applying that growth rate to the 2003 estimate puts current numbers in southern southeast around 13,000 otters. She says she's still reviewing data from the latest survey and does not expect to release an abundance estimate until next year. She also plans to survey the northern part of the region next summer and come up with an abundance estimate for the entire region in late 2011.
So in July and August of next year, I'll be spending another quality month in southeast. I'll be based out of Sitka this time, and I'll be surveying everything from Petersburg north.
Gill's work confirms a growing chorus of concern from southeast Alaska's fishing fleets, reporting an increasing otter population that is also expanding its range. Fishermen and crabbers have been moving out of areas newly colonized by sea otters and say the animals are impacting Dungeness crab and sea cucumber harvests. The state has also closed areas of the commercial dive fishery due to otter predation. An otter can eat up to a quarter of its body weight every day and eats a wide range of fish and shellfish. Researchers used spotting scopes to observe otter foraging last summer in four sites in southeast. University doctoral student Zach Hoyt says he collected information from 1,600 to 1,700 foraging dives and found otters eating six different species also caught by commercial fishing fleets. The otter diet research will continue into next year, and other work will involve capturing and implanting 40 otters with radio tracking tags near Cake and QU Island. In Petersburg, I'm Joe Vicknicki.
A well-known southeast fisheries pioneer died last week in a tragic accident. 89-year-old John Clausen of Pelican was killed after his ATV went off a dock on December 23rd. Clausen was delivering wrapped gifts to a waiting float plane when his enclosed four-wheeler went over the dock, struck the pontoon of the plane, and sank in over 30 feet of water. A local diver recovered Clausen 20 minutes later, according to a report from the Alaska State Troopers. He could not be revived. Clausen built the fishing vessel Lightly and was a pioneer in the troll fishery in southeast. Clausen's obituary in the Juneau Empire newspaper says a memorial will likely be held in early February, weather permitting, and a small Viking longship full of afterlife necessities will be cast aflame into the sunset in his honor. It goes on to say that anyone, quote, wishing to make a gesture in memoriam are encouraged to do something they thought was impossible. There's a good chance you'll be surprised by what you can do.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960 or online at alaskaboat.com.
And finally this week, I want to end by thanking every reporter who's helped us out this year. This show wouldn't be possible without their skill, knowledge, and generosity. So, from east to west, thank you Libby Casey, Michelle Norris, Tom Bonsi, John Ryan, Deanna Garrison, Maria Dudzak, Tony Gorman, Matt Lichtenstein, Joe Vicknicki, Melody Kay, Peter Helgeson, Rosemary Alexander, Casey Kelly, Matt Miller, Ed Schoenfeld, Robert Woolsey, Ed Ronco, Steve Johnson, Tara Bicknell, Eric Wander, Dan Bross, Emily Schwing, Ellen Lockyer, Lori Townsend, Steve Heimel, Len Anderson, Wesley Loy, Andrew Jensen, Margie Bauman, Ben Stanton, Marsha Lynn, Aaron Selbig, Paulette Wellington, Lainey Welch, Diana Gish, Jacob Resnick, Mike Mason, Adam Kane, Kells Hetherington, Angela Denning Barnes, Shane Iverson, Lorelei Kanin, Ann Hillman, and Alexandra Gutierrez. Whew. Thank you one and all. So from KMXT and Kodiak, I'm Jay Barrett, wishing you a happy new year.